Hi, everyone. It's Mary Lou Tyler. I have a very, very, very special guest. And the reason why I say that is because she has the just the lucky draw of working with my co-writer on Predictable Prospecting, Jeremy Donovan. Alia Homason is here today. She's the Vice President of Sales Strategy at GLG Group. And her talk with me today is going to really lighten all of you up because she's actually on the front line. She's executing. She's activating. She's responsible. And I'll let her tell you all the wonderful things that she does. But she is really kind of walking the walk. So, you know, I talk a lot about how to do things and why we do things, but she's actually implementing and making things even better. So she's probably smarter than I am on what works, what doesn't in the field. So without further ado, Alia Homason, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Mary Lou. Appreciate it.
So tell us again, tell us your role within GLG Group and what life is like there and what area that you're working on right now.
Yeah, so my role at GLG is a bit unique. It spans both our new business efforts globally across our business units. And so thinking about how do we partner with, you know, given AEs and sales managers with respect to process and execution and accountability. Also do a lot of work around kind of a subset of sales enablement with respect to training, coaching, collateral, and spend a lot of time doing training as we onboard new talent, reinforcement training with anybody that's on the team, and also a lot of kind of leveling up training, if you will. So people that are already great at certain things and how do we make them exceptional and a bit more well-rounded. So it spans a bit of a gamut. One other unique thing I will mention about my role in the new business side is we call them BDAs, but what for most organizations are called SDRs. They actually roll up into our team as well, which affords us a unique and exciting opportunity to, you know, be on the front line, certainly on the prospecting side, but it's a great tandem and complement to the broader work we're doing across the organization, across the new business sales process as well.
So you're soup to nuts then. You actually handle, if we were to look at the pipeline, the active pipeline as an assembly line, you actually engage at the very beginning when we're in pre-sales conversation mode, which is what I call it. I don't know. That makes sense to me because you're not quite in that first conversation, but you're trying to warm up the chill to get to the first conversation. Mm-hmm. And then your follow-up conversations is under you as well as once it gets to opportunity and beyond to close one, you're touching those folks as well, correct?
Correct.
Wow. Okay, cool. So where do we begin? Let's start, since most of my guys are top of funnel. I'm curious, what you mentioned the word playbook. Tell us about what that means in terms of how do you know, here's my question. How do you know what people need training on from the playbook? Or do you just, when you're starting people out, do you take them through a standard process of here's the things you need to learn before we'll put you on the phones or get you out there starting conversations? Or do you wait and see based on the data saying where people are getting stuck in order to invoke certain types of training? How does that work?
Yeah, so I would say we come at it from a multitude of different angles, and obviously we value certain angles more than others. So certainly a starting point that we had is, you know, with all of the heads of sales talking about from a process standpoint, mm-hmm. where do we think we're good? Where do we think we need improvement? And in some instances, have we, you know, kind of codified and defined that process in a way that's trainable and digestible for any sales individual that's on our team. So really mapping out, you know, what are we doing in every client conversation we're having, whether that's on the new business side or whether that's on the account management side. You know, who's accountable on the GLG side for owning those conversations and looping in other partners? And then who's actually the target on the client side, right? So client persona work, but also are we talking about someone that's a user of the GLG service or a buyer or a sponsor? But then I think what also we've spent a lot of time on, and it's a bit of a labor of love, is how do you actually, you know, have those client conversations, right? And as I'm sure as you know, you know, it's one thing to put on paper, you know, what are you going to do and who are you going to, you know, have the conversation with. It's another it's an art to actually how you have the conversation. And so for us, that translates to, you know, some habits around, you know, pre and post call planning, to be strategic about what we're having in those conversations and defining, you know, what good looks like in those planning meetings. But also we spend a lot of time on the actual client communication. So thinking about meeting structure, thinking about sample language, but also what has been, what also informs kind of where we have work to do is we do weekly role plays across the organization. The SDR teams do daily role plays, but the AEs across the organization do weekly role plays. And that's a great way in an organic kind of fashion to both kind of coach and teach, but also kind of assess how key pain points where it's an environment where, you know, a very tenured sales individual has an opportunity to showcase all of the great skill sets and talents that they have. But then in exchange for that, you know, kind of showcase, if you will, it makes them a lot more comfortable and exposes areas of improvement. And I think a much more organic way than kind of asking someone, you know, what do they need improvement by? And then, of course, you have the layer on top of that of, you know, ride-alongs with the sales managers that can inform key areas of need as well.
Okay. So for those listening right now, GLG, give us a little background because you sell a service, correct? Or is there a product in there, or is it mostly service-oriented?
It's mainly service-oriented, correct.
Yeah. Okay. So for those of you listening who thinks process really works for widgets only, this is a great example, a great case study or use case on selling a high-end service, but separating the roles out and really honing in on not only intra-stage, but inter-stage enablement throughout the process. So, you know, it can be done. There's a lot of work to it. As Alea was saying, you know, trying to figure out those conversations and which ones you should have. And in the book, Jeremy and I talk about the different levels of awareness, as well overlaying the types of language, the types of conversations, and where the buyer is in his purchase intent. All of that falls underneath your organization then, right? Is that correct?
Correct.
Wow. Okay. So where are you seeing, let's take the SDR teams first, because that's my wheelhouse. Where are you seeing that you're having the most impact by leveraging these types of playbooks or this thing called sales enablement? Where is that showing up as being just paramount for an SDR world?
You know, I think for the SDR team specifically, I mean, our team is perhaps a bit unique. It's full of exceptionally talented career switchers. So I have the luxury of individuals that are super excited and invested in making a pivot over to sales, and are hungry to learn and don't have any bad habits, but also don't have any kind of preconceived notions. So we spend a lot of time, not surprisingly, on training that dovetails and interrelates with all of the playbooks and role plays and things like that that we're doing with the AEs across the organization as well. If I could say, you know, maybe three things that we do with that team that I think is exceptionally impactful is, one is, you know, on the hiring front, we've actually, you know, moved away from some of the traditional hiring methods of, you know, the gut, if you will, and we actually have what I think is a fairly unique kind of three-stage process. One is phone screen where, you know, we ask candidates essentially the same two or three questions, have them role play without giving them the heads up that they're going to role play, and looking for not obviously the perfect client conversation or role play, but looking for a bit of intuition, looking for coachability especially. We have a hyper feedback culture on our team and across our organization in sales. And so, you know, we, after that role play, we give build upon and think about feedback. And so how a candidate is receptive to that feedback, engaged in that feedback, is a key indicator to me of success on our team and in our organization. Mm-hmm. And then in complement to that, we have them complete essentially an assessment that, you know, scales across 18 what we feel like are key competencies for a hunting-oriented sales individual. And so we not only have the, you know, kind of subjective elements, we also get the objective elements as well through the combination of the phone screen and that assessment. Second, second phase is a bit of a case study, which really is meant to be indicative of the research and the planning that they would do before they outreach to a given individual. Because on our team, we're all about quality over quantity. And so we don't necessarily dictate how many emails you're sending, how many calls you're making, but we do expect you to be thoughtful, do great research up front so you can, you know, make a connection with that prospect that you're outreaching to. And then third step is kind of the standard in-person, where we'll do some extra role plays and things like that. But each person in that interview has a defined, you know, skill set and competency that they're kind of fleshing out. So I think robust, adding some, you know, quantitative, you know, the assessment and really extra structure to the hiring process has allowed us to identify and attract great talent. The second thing is, as part of the onboarding, we do a really intensive onboarding that's less of shadow this experienced, really effective salesperson, and it's much more building from the ground up with respect to not only sales skills, so holding an effective meeting, what are components of that meeting, how do you think about objection handling, reverse questioning, things like that, and techniques, but also really robust industry training for the industry that they're going to be covering when they start outreach. We do that in a robust fashion so that we're able to actually have incoming SDRs on the phone with prospects at the beginning of week four. And we've got kind of stage gates to QA, obviously, that they're ready to do that. And then I think as an ongoing, once they're actually speaking with prospects, is, you know, we've got a program where we've clearly defined kind of four modules for them throughout the year that they're expected to be in the SDR program. And so clear responsibilities and roles that they have at any point in that SDR role. And it feels, and it is like little micro promotions with you, if you will, with respect to, you've been able to demonstrate this is a key competency and continued success. So we're going to add this element of responsibility on top of it. And then from a time blocking and accountability, we're just, you know, we've created a culture where, you know, you have four outreach blocks a day and you're doing thoughtful, really constructive outreach during those times. And then we've also got, you know, great breaks, you know, interwoven in the day as well. And it allows the team to flow, I think, in a really productive way and kind of removes the, you know, the distractions and the feeling that, you know, kind of, you know, because sometimes it can feel a bit like a grind, right, when you're, you know, sending the emails and making the calls. But if you've got a whole team ebbing and flowing their day accordingly, and they know they're holding each other accountable during those times, it just creates a culture where people want to win and see each other win and, you know, are invested in each other's success. So it's a bit of the hiring, the onboarding, and then I would say kind of the accountability and the time blocking and the daily role plays that we're doing with the team. I think you have the, you know, habit trumps inspiration. And so I think that's a recurring theme through a lot of what we're structuring, creating that so it's kind of second nature. And so a lot of, like I like to say to the team, your creative thinking is freed up for that actual relationship you're trying to build with the prospect, right? You don't have to worry about how you're managing the day. It's kind of already set up front for you.
It's set up for you, and it's generally, like you said, the time blocking. I call it block time, but it's the same thing. It's, in my world, that's a single tasking as much as possible for a prolonged period of time that allows you, especially for phone work, you get better and better as you go. But of course, breaks are needed to get up, stretch, walk around, you know, to, you're not just tied to your chair the whole time. But it does allow you to compartmentalize the different tasks so that you are proficient at each. And the day does go by quicker when you feel more focused. I mean, it doesn't allow for a lot of room for you to be checking your email or looking at, you know, any type of social things. You're basically doing your workflow. You're, like I say, you plan your work and you work your plan, which is what really works well for business development.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So the other thing I heard you say was about daily role playing. When is that incorporated in your world? Is it early AM? Is it as needed during a certain block time? How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, so for the SDR team, it's a standing time at 3:30 each day. Okay. We've started, as people progress through the program and start to co-lead and own kind of that second conversation outside that initial outreach, for us, we'll flip, you know, those role plays to kind of pitch practices, if you will. Those are standing times at 10:30s on Wednesday and Friday for folks that are they're farther along. And so if they have a pitch practice, they don't also have a role play. So, but for the bulk of the team, the role plays are 3:30. For the AEs in the business units, they have standing time on Mondays. And for time zone reasons, they have essentially half the team at, 10:30 in the morning and another half of the team in an afternoon, either 1 or 2 p.m. But it's a standing time each day or each week. And so it, again, gets to be habit. And so that you just intuitively know, I'm never available at that time slot on that given day because I know I have a role play.
And regarding the role play itself, how do you determine the schedule? For example, when I was doing this with my teams, I would have role plays for the different types of telephone calls that we were going to do, whether it was a find the right person call. This is pre having all this wonderful information now at your fingertips, but let's pretend that we are still mapping into an organization and we can't find the right person because we have so many titles to deal with that we don't know. So we worked on that kind of call. We worked on a fit call. We call it an AWAF, are we a fit call? We worked on qualification calls. We also worked on heavily on objection handling and that intro call. So are you set up that way as well? Or do you do, is it based on, I'm trying to get to the fact that are these schedules dynamic or are they static? And if they're dynamic, what are they based on? Is it some type of discovery through the data that the call wrap up that you were talking about before that drives the role play? Or is it a set schedule?
It's a little bit of a blend. And so if we see either through conversion rates or just to be honest, sales individuals raising their hand and wanting some additional coaching, we'll go the route of, today we're going to spend some time, really focused on, or this month actually in these weekly role plays, we're going to really focus on this type of a client conversation, whether that's better pain identification, further qualification, that renewal conversation that may be, a bit tough for us on the account management side. But if we don't have that situation, typically what we'll do is in the interest of making it as relevant and tangible as possible for the sales individuals, we really like to practice real upcoming client conversations that individuals are going to have. And so what most often happens, especially outside of a kind of initial onboarding and ramp up of the role plays as people get acclimated, is less of a we're going to focus on qualification today, and it's more, I'd like to volunteer. I have a really tough client conversation next week. Here's the scenario. And therefore, they role play around that. And we've structured some really robust kind of feedback forms as well around each different client conversation throughout our sales processes, both on the new business side as well as account management, and are also kind of, helping to train people on what it means to give and provide excellent feedback to just make them as most impactful as possible. So typically it lends more around a real client scenario that someone is prepping for and just would love the benefit of peers and a manager kind of giving them perspective on, what they're doing really great and what they could do differently.
That's great. Yeah. I love role playing. I think it's one of those things, and I'm so happy to hear from you that your AEs are doing that as well, because I was just at a conference in Florida where I was listening. They were working on their new messaging, and they brought an AE up to role play the new message, and it was incredible to watch him because they just got this new messaging like the night before, and he had to put together a conversation. He was talking to the CEO. They were up on stage, and it was like, wow. And that's because they he felt so comfortable and practiced so much that type of conversation that he did really well. So I'm sure he's the kind of guy who practices what he's going to say, whether it's a formal process through the company or not. And I'm sure that the AEs probably really benefit from that. And do you see a reduction in the lag in the pipeline through all these efforts? I mean, is it intuitively speeding things up in your, do you think, or?
So I would say we did a huge push around the playbooks and the role plays and things like that on the AE front at the beginning of this year in January. So for our sales cycle, we're just starting to see some of the fruits of that labor, but definitely from a you know, people having confidence, being able to, I would say, conversion rates we're just starting to be able to see, but what we're seeing is like an early indicator to that is better and more confidence in the pipeline. So people having the confidence to disqualify versus create these opportunities that aren't really good opportunities. So from a quality of the pipeline standpoint, we've been seeing a lot of that for months. On the earliest with the SDR team, where we've been having a lot of the structure in place since early last year, for that we've seen our conversion and our you know win rate from you know those initial outreaches and those emails to conversion to those pitch meetings or that second conversation for us. We've seen that continue to move from what you know out of the gate we started with around you know 5%, I would say, which is not bad, but you know it's not a bad starting point. And now for the team of SDRs which are doing this you know, day in and day out, their pitch rate is actually 12%. So we've seen that accelerate tremendously. And really, they've been, I mean, they're really a talented team, and they've been able to maintain that 12% as people have graduated out of that program into AE roles and we've incorporated new talent. We've seen a great consistency in that ramp and effectiveness to secure those meetings.
That's wonderful. Wow. That's great work, you guys over there, because that is a target that does ebb and flow sometimes, especially your path. It sounds like you've got, I heard a junior SDR role, for lack of a better term, that gets those first conversations in place. And then there's someone still business development, but furthers the conversation through qualification. And then beyond that, the account executive. So I think that maintaining those, that consistency and conversion rates with the movement upward, so to speak, or laterally, depending on where they're going within the company, giving them growth, is that's fabulous. Let's switch gears a little bit in our remaining time, because I heard you say content. Do you also work on the content assets and making sure that the personalization pieces, if there are personalization, are aligned from the language? Because in the book, and Jeremy was really instrumental in this, we talked about three levels of personalization. There's the data-driven, which is the highest, you know, reliance on technology. One step from that would be where the data elements in our database help with the conversation. It's still a mass personalized, so we're not taking that email or taking that body and modifying it in any way. And then hyper-personalization would be where the SDRs are actually using a template and then creating more of a personalized message from that. Where are you with that now?
Yeah, I would say, you know, we definitely practice hyper-personalization at scale.
Okay.
And so the, you know, the messaging to any SDR or AE across the firm is really, you know, your goal, again, because we've structured a lot of you know, things that can be habitual for you, you know, it really does free up. And part of that to me is, you know, starting point templates that have tested well and you see in the data, you know, put someone in a position of success. Mm-hmm. And so they're freed up then to really, you know, try to get to know prospect A, you know, through their social accounts, through LinkedIn, through, you know, just general Google, et cetera, in any way they can, and try to understand that individual and see how they can customize on top of that messaging to really resonate with that person in a way that, you know, is going to be different, right, if they were hunting you or if they were hunting me. And so we've really tried to structure the role in a way that, you know, all of that creative personalization is really the mandate of, you know, the SDRs and the sales team. But certainly, I mean, you know, I wouldn't expect to see the same email coming from, you know, any individual on the team because that's not the expectation of what we've said. And I think that's a key, probably not surprising to you, but I think that's been a key to that kind of 12%, you know, win rate because instead of, you know, outreaching to 400, 500 names in a given month, you know, for us, it's, you know, we have a certain level of expectation of outreach to be successful. But, you know, again, I'm not really, you know, saying to a given SDR, you're sending this many, you know, you're making this many calls in a day and this many emails being sent in a given day. It's, you know, during your time blocks, do really thoughtful, great work. And that will result in that win rate and a certain number of wins in the week for us. So definitely hyper-personalization is what we think is the name of the game, certainly to be successful in our business.
And do you start them off, though, when you hyper-personalize with a template that has a majority of the sales messaging inside of it, or are they starting with a blank screen?
We have a template that has the majority of the sales messaging.
Okay.
Yeah, so they don't have to worry about how to position GLG, if you will. They certainly need to understand how we're positioned so they can have the client conversations. But in the email, we're much more, how do you make that one-on-one connection with that prospect on top of the messaging that we're putting forth for you?
Okay, very good. And then are there other assets that you attach with a hyper-personalized, as an example, a should-ask questions that they can link to? Is there any type of click-through that you include in the hyper-personalization?
There is, and it depends. I mean, I would say, you know, a key focus for us is probably thinking more broadly about the assets that we have available to us and different assets that we can create. Currently, we'll use, in great partnership with our marketing team, you know, we've got some client testimonials that depending on, you know, the role in the industry that a given prospect may sit in could resonate well. Mm-hmm. We also have just some great, what we call learning videos, if you will, that are examples and highlights of different council members in our network, which are a key part of our service, giving us a sense of the quality of those individuals and the types of insights that they may have, and kind of quick snippets that we'll kind of append and link in our emails as well, again, if it's applicable.
Right. Okay. Well, this has been a fabulous conversation. We're kind of running out of time here, but I wanted to ask you, I'm sure people on this are listening to this call and thinking, okay, role play is really important. There is also a level of systemization here that you guys have been able to put into place that have served you well. If you're giving advice to a company and they're just starting to think about enablement, what would be like the top thing you'd want them to go home and just sort of noodle around in their brain and start thinking about implementing?
I would say probably overarching. I think a key thing is, you know, not to be afraid of structure. You know, when we're building out a lot of, you know, this, whether it's playbooks, the weekly or daily role plays, depending on the team and things like that, some of the initial reaction was, this seems really structured. This seems, you know, mechanical. You know, sales is an art, which I 100% agree that there's certainly an art and an inspiration, right, to sales. But I would encourage people to think about, you know, how structure can kind of free up certainly your high performers to do what they do best and focus on that client conversation. And what we've heard resoundingly over the past 2 years, if we implemented a lot of this, is, and I see it in my day-to-day when I'm doing outreach to clients as well, it's, you know, that structure, again, allows you to do the work you actually want to do, right? Like, no one signs up in sales to say, oh, I would love to log information in Salesforce, and I would love to do all of this other system work, right? I mean, they join sales and they love sales because it's all about personal connection and communication. And what structure can allow you to do is, you know, build that out for people and then allow them to not have to worry about things that they don't want to focus on and really, you know, blossom and do what, you know, they joined this profession to do. And I think you'll see your high performers blossom and react really, really well to what initially may feel like, I'm not so sure we want to add so much structure around this.
Yeah, I agree 100%, obviously, but I also was at a meeting the other day where someone looked at me and said, you know, Mary Lou, what looks like chaos, if it looks like chaos to you, it's really a system that you can't see. And what you've done with your group there is you've enabled that system so they can see it. And once they can see it, that frees them to focus on what matters, which is the sales skills, the sales conversations, because everything else is put into a nice, neat system that just really frees up your time. So
yeah.
I hope people will think of it that way.
Yeah. And I would, one quick thing to add too, is I think critical when you build that system is talk openly about that system. You know, don't make it a black box for the sales team. Communicate to them why it's built specifically for them and how it will help them, you know, be better at their jobs and how you're using it as well. And it's going to, you know, continue to iterate. I think, you know, building that system without that active communication and dialogue can be difficult and probably less successful. So don't be afraid of it and don't be afraid to talk about it, I think would probably be the takeaway.
That's great advice. So how do people get a hold of you then if they want to either further this conversation or find out more about how you're running things over there?
Yeah, so probably two best ways to get a hold of me. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm Aaliyah Homison, so first name A-L-E-A, last name H-O-M-I-S-O-N. And then feel free to either send me an email on LinkedIn or you can email me here at GLG at ahomison@glgroup.com.
And I'll be sure to put your contact information in the show notes so that if anyone wants to speak with Aaliyah. And I really suggest if you're a leader listening to this conversation or someone in the organization who thinks that it's too chaotic and that you're stressed, this is one of the things to alleviate that stress right away. It takes time to build, as Aaliyah said, but it's something that once it's built, it's iterating, it's getting better, and it will free up your time so that you can do what you've been hired for, which is to generate new business, close deals, service great accounts, whatever it is that we're hired to do. A system in place will help you get there faster and better and with less stress. Thank you so much, Aaliyah. I really love speaking with you today.